Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
You're listening to an Anna's Owl Ministries podcast.
Hello, friends. Welcome to another episode of What's News on your favorite, maybe your favorite pop culture podcast, the podcast that looks to explore all those new things that come out in the culture that pops. Man, and there's no shortage of it. There's no end in sight. There is so much to geek out about. And I can't wait to discuss with some of my favorite geekologists here, Christian Ashley, Kevin Schaefer. How are you guys doing? We're coming off the high of the weekend and Comic-Cons and movies. Ugh, are you feeling fantastic?
Fantastic as can be, Will.
Pretty fantastic. I'm here suffering for Jesus at the beach right now.
Oh, I'm jealous. Although I go to the beach a lot, so I can't be too jealous. But yeah, my favorite spot. Yeah, so friends, thank you for tuning in to another What's News episode. And this is what we're going to discuss today. All right, so I hope you're ready. We're going to discuss news out of San Diego Comic-Con, the Comic-Con that kind of started Comic-Cons, news that came out of that when it comes to comics and TV shows and movies. We're going to talk about that episode of South Park that the world seems to talk about and a lot of memes are floating around. We're going to give you our hot takes on that. And then we're going to give a review and hot take on the Fantastic Four movie, maybe the fourth time's charm. It's right there in the title. First steps. Did they step in the right direction? Well, we're going to find out today with some of your hosts here. And, you know, I just want to also share that we will also do a super dratastic review of all three big blockbuster movies over the summer. That's going to be an episode onto itself. And we'll talk about all three movies of Jurassic World Reborn. That's what it Reborn.
Rebirth, reborn.
You know, I'm caught up with.
I can keep track these days.
I can't keep track with all the reboots when it comes to comics and my pop culture. But yeah, Jurassic World and Superman, Fantastic Four, we're going to put them all together. We did a review beforehand, what we are excited about, we wanted to see. And now that they're all out and out in the wild and we've seen it, we'll talk about that. We'll do that in an episode all by itself. But today, what's new in pop culture, a little lightning round and what's going around, all those things. So, thanks, y'all. We appreciate it. Hey, thanks for our patrons, those who support us, those who are subscribers on YouTube. If you haven't subscribed yet, subscribe, like, pass around, share with friends. We want to thank for our Patreon supporters. John Augustine, thank you so much for your support and all that you do to help us keep moving forward in this podcast game and geeking out with everyone. And yeah, we love this. This is, you know, none of us are getting paid big bucks for this. We like to hang out with our friends, geek out with each other, and then process these stories that mean a lot to us. So thank you all for joining us on this ride. Let's hop right in. Let's go into the lightning round. Did you hear that thunder? I did. So let's go around. Quick hits. Man, Kevin, I saw some pics of you this past weekend geeking out hard. What's in your lightning round? What are you geeking out about?
I was about to say, so I was at GalaxyCon Raleigh this past weekend, which Laura, a host of the show, was also there. I didn't run into her, but yeah, I met some big names. But the one that was just like, they announced him late because there were some last minute cancellations and then they picked up some guests as backups. And the one, when I saw his name announced, I was like, oh my gosh. Yeah. But the one in all the Andy Serkis was there. Good. One of my favorite actors of all time, not just from Lord of the Rings. Obviously, that's a huge like portion. But I mean, Peter Jackson's King Kong, Tintin, the Planet of the Apes movies. Like he gave birth to motion capture performances, mm-hmm. and really solidified that as a means of artistic performance. And then also, I mean, you see him in live action as well, with where he's not doing motion capture, like in The Batman and in Andor. He's incredible. Yeah. So I was just ecstatic to meet him. So there's my picture, getting to meet him. And the really cool moment was, I went up to his table, got to talk with him for a minute, and he was very interested in my robot arm. And he said that he actually has a sister in a wheelchair. So he was really, I was like, I should have, I look at that, I'm like, I should have like tried to give him my email or something and be like, hey, I can, you know, connect you with people that, that manufacture these. But yeah, it was awesome. He was just as nice as could be. I also, on the way out, I said, hey, if Tintin 2 ever gets made, I'm there opening night. He said, he's like, bro, me too. I I'm so ready for it to get made as well. But so that was awesome. So that was by far the highlight. I mean, there are some other great, I got to meet Grant Gustin and Tyler Hoechlin and Jason Isaacs. That was really cool too. So really fun weekend. And the other lightning round pick I wanted to share real quick is, very different movie from what we're going to talk about later today, but also has, because like everything, Pedro Pascal is in it, because, you know, where is that guy not in movies and TV? I will say he's not as big a role as you might expect from the marketing here. This is very much a Joaquin Phoenix driven movie, but this is the latest film from Ari Aster called Eddington. Cool. And I really love this movie. I was surprised because I'm not the biggest fan of Hereditary or Midsommar. I know those are like, you know, huge. And say, I mean, there's aspects of each I like, but also it's part of it where they were just too dark for me and like too depressing. And then I've not seen Bo is Afraid yet. I am going to, especially after this. But I thought Eddington was a masterpiece. This is actually, this movie, not a lighthearted one by any means. Mm-hmm. It is set in the days of COVID in 2020 in a small fictional town in New Mexico. So it's a neo-Western set in the middle of the pandemic. So you can imagine that scene. But it's also, while it's dark, it's also really darkly funny. There's a lot of brilliant satire there about, and I listened to an interview with Ari Aster where he said the internet basically wrote this movie for him because he was trying to comment on the different conversations that were happening on, and I hesitate to even say conversations, but just like the, you know, all of the activity on social media that was prevalent during COVID, yeah. George Floyd, all these things, just, you know, where people are isolated and now, you know, ideologies are conflicting and there's misinformation. And then there's also truth like embedded in there as well. And he wasn't trying to particularly take a side in this. He was just kind of showing different points here, but he had really interesting characters. And I thought it was an incredible film. And, you know, I mean, Joaquin Phoenix was incredible here. That one of his best performances. So highly recommend, again, not at all a lighthearted time. So I would not go if you're in the mood for light escapism, but if you want a very engaging and exhilarating film that challenges things, then I think that it will a spark conversation, this is one to see.
Well, you're one of our, definitely one of our hosts that's kind of the movie expert, movie buff, and your recommendations come high. So yeah, I like all the actors in this movie. So that's definitely something that speaks my interest. I didn't put it in my radar this summer at all. So love it. Hey, thanks. Thanks here. Who
love this. Very nice.
Thanks.
Thank you. You are fantastic too.
Yay. There you go. Lifting our spirits. Folks, we have comments on our YouTube page. If you're listening to this on the podcast, you can hop over and watch and see the pictures and the images on YouTube. And then we have comments there too, where people chime in. We like to share them and be a part of the journey with us. Christian, what's in your lightning round? What are you excited about?
Yeah, real briefly, I saw the new Thai zombie movie, Siam, being a playoff of Siam. And it was very fun. It didn't reinvent the wheel in any way, shape, or form. It's basically in a world where people aren't able to gain access to food anymore because of rising temperatures and animals being killed off. The guy who becomes like the big CEO pretty much of Thailand at this point in time uses insect-based stuff, and he's trying to make this new thing that unfortunately causes people to turn into zombies. So what happens when you do that? You fight them with Muay Thai, and that's what our main character does. It realism doesn't exist in this world. It's fine. He survives way too many things he shouldn't, but it's fun.
Cool. Well, I'll chime in. Oh, you got another one? You got another one, yeah. Christian?
Once again, the new Ultraman series, Ultraman Omega, is releasing on these. If you can always watch it for free with subtitles, because they're not dubbing this one just yet, on the Tsuburaya Productions YouTube page. It's a new fun play on it. There, you know, making it to where, you know, Ultra isn't really inhabiting a human body this time around. So mm-hmm. it's him kind of learning what humans are like, and it's a lot of good fun. So yeah.
We like Ultraman, one of the original heroes out there. We have an episode on that way back when too. Oh, and I'll share mine. Mine's The Bear. I'm a fan of this show. I am season 4 is happening right now. It's all out there. I have one episode left. I have the finale, season finale to do as of today recording. So man, that's gonna be tonight. I can't wait to see how this wraps up. But I adore this show. It, again, like Kevin, if you want like a really feel good, you're gonna feel great about yourself at the end of an episode. It's not necessarily, man, I don't know how to describe in terms of complicated family systems and relationships, and it gets tense. There's a lot of yelling. There's a lot of cussing that can happen in restaurants and kitchens. But like, you know, you don't necessarily have to be a soccer fan to enjoy Ted Lasso because you just love the characters, and that's just the means and the tool by which they deliver these dynamics that happens in these relationships. The same way with The Bear. It's about cooking, it's about restaurants, but it's more than that, because that's just the tool that help reveal deep issues and characteristics of the characters in this show. And I absolutely adore it. I will say that season 4, episode 3 is one of the most beautiful episodes of TV I've ever watched in terms of how it's edited, how it's cut, the music that's played, the dynamics, what you experience at the end. Man, it was just an incredible episode. And so, yeah, I highly recommend The Bear. I love it. I can't wait to see what the finale says and where they go from there. I'm on the edge of my seat. What happens next? You guys watch this one?
It's on my list. So this is actually the first year where I've actually watched most of the Emmy nominations. That was good because I got to watch White Lotus, Severance, Last of Us. I'm watching The Pitt right now. The Bear is like one of my, like, I will get to it. I know, you know, how critically acclaimed it is, how many people love it. But I just got to be, yeah, it's just one I got to commit to.
I guess there's a larger discussion why it's categorized as like a comedy, because it's not necessarily comedy. There's some dark humor in it, different things. And I guess there's a reason why they put it in this category and genre, you know, to round out the categories and genres. I haven't really explored why they label it a comedy, but it's definitely a drama, and there's a lot going on with each and every character, and there's character growth within that as you go on each season. So if for some reason you're like, man, it's so intense, you're in the first season, they're like, it's just a bunch of people yelling at each other, yelling at F-bombs each other in a kitchen. Why would I hang out and do this? There's more growth, and it evolves as the seasons go on. So hang in there. Keep it going. But I also understand if you're like, I have too much of that in my daily life or my family systems or relationships, I don't need it in my TV. I understand that as well. All right, let's move on to other topics. So this past week and weekend was San Diego Comic-Con out in California, out in San Diego. And this is the Comic-Con that started it all. Whatever local Comic-Con or big Comic-Con you go to in your local town around the United States, around the world, San Diego was one of the original ones that was mainly revolved around comic books and sci-fi. Eventually, when it became cool to like comic books and comic book movies and pop culture and sci-fi, and nerds and geeks became a money-making machine, Hollywood and TV came in. And I know I don't want to be too strong in words of appropriated, but they muscled their way in because they know of how big this Comic-Con is and what it can do if you're going to promote a movie or a comic or an idea or a TV show. And so Hall H is one of the big places where they have panels that talk about what's coming up next or what happened. And, you know, I think now, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but I think because Disney and other places have their own, and Star Wars have their own conventions, they don't have as big a presence as they used to, maybe at San Diego Comic-Con. They want to save the big news and the big breaking news for their own convention, for their own, place where they hang out and nerd out and share those things. But still, Comic-Con still has the place where the best in the business when it comes to pop culture, comics, sci-fi go to table and to meet fans and to promote their work that has been and coming up. And it's also where they have the Eisners, which is like the Oscars and the Emmys for those in the comic book business. So we're going to talk about some news that came out of that. First of all, where do you guys want to start? Do you want to start with comics? Do you want to start with TV, movies? Or what's something that excited you that came out of San Diego Comic-Con that you were like, oh, I can't wait for that?
So this was a unique one this year that wasn't necessarily really related to any particular media. Well, kind of, but it was George Lucas's first ever appearance at San Diego Comic-Con. Yeah. And he was there to promote his upcoming art museum. So I thought that was fascinating. And he was joined by Guillermo del Toro and several others. And I don't know if I'll ever make it out to them, but that was just really cool to see, to think that someone, the creator of Star Wars, had never been to Comic-Con. I can only imagine being there this year, especially in a year where Marvel wasn't there at Hall H like they usually have, because they had Fantastic Four come out this weekend, and they took a step back a little bit. DC, there was some news, but not like a huge amount. So it was a different kind of atmosphere, it seemed like. But to have George Lucas there, I thought that was incredible. Yeah.
Now, isn't there didn't at some point when Star Wars was just trying to get up and going, wasn't there some kind of push there at back in the early 70s of pitching this idea of Star Wars? That might be a legend.
I do know that because I think Mark Hamill was going to before he was famous, was going when the first one was just being promoted, was being going to smaller conventions like that. Because my creative writing professor from college is a pretty established science fiction author, and he was at a convention back then, and he said Mark Hamill and Gary Kurtz were there. So there were people from before it was this pop culture juggernaut. They were there promoting it, even at smaller, more literary conventions. Because, like you said, Comic Cons were so different at that time than they are now. Yeah. San Diego, though, George Lucas had never been, so that was really cool.
I've been to North Carolina Comic Con, some Comic Cons up and down the East Coast, but I would love to go to San Diego Comic Con at some point. It's on my bucket list of places to experience.
Yeah. I think it would just be, just to be in that atmosphere and everything would be incredible. But that was one of my other really cool moments. And then some others before, I do want to talk about the Peacemaker trailer, some other news there. So they did, dropped an image from the upcoming Avatar Last Airbender the next animated series that will be set after Korra. That looks amazing. Seven Havens. It looks amazing. So they did talk about that. Very excited for that. I think we'll definitely be talking about that on this show when that premieres, it'll be a big year for Avatar fans, because we've got that along with the movie late in, I think it's fall of next year, that's also animated, and it's a feature length. It'll be in theaters, and I believe that one focuses on Aang and Zuko as adults, set in that era. So be really excited time for Last Airbender fans. That was really cool. Some of the comic news I saw, the Ultimate Universe will be ending, which kind of sad to see it go, but also I'm glad they're not going to stretch it out forever. I think if they have a good plan in motion, I'm really excited to see where it all culminates.
Yeah, let's pause there a moment, because Christian Scher, Ultimate Spider-Man has been one of your favorite Spider-Man books as a Spider-Man fan, and they're going to end it with number 24.
I literally just bought the second volume earlier today at this new comic shop that just opened in Myrtle Beach. So I was looking forward to having more, but it looks like is it actually ending, or is this just the Hickman reign is ending and someone else is going to do something after we deal with the Maker? It's all over the place. It's making them way too much money for them to quit, is my opinion. Consistently outselling Spider-Man, which is the reason why the Spider Office does what it does, because they can do whatever and people will buy it. So I reward good comics by buying them.
I do think it could, I know they're setting it up. I knew Denise Camp, who wrote The Ultimates, is going to write the big crossover that ends it. But I agree, Christian. I think it is because it's so popular, and I've talked to many people who aren't even regular comic readers that have picked it up and have been really interested in the story, whether it's Spider-Man or Black Panther or any of the Ultimate books. It's been really fascinating. Same with the Absolute Universe in DC. Yeah. So I really enjoy it. I think, even if they do a big crossover that, puts some kind of conclusion, I agree. It's been so popular that I think they'll find a way to keep it going in some way down the road. Because I want to see Ultimate Daredevil. I want to see, you know, I mean, more of these characters that have been included here, but I want to see their own books. I've really enjoyed this universe. So I would be happy to see it keep going as long as they have a good story to tell.
And what they announced was this Ultimate Endgame, which is a 5-issue limited series that's going to kind of be the culmination of the Ultimate Universe and Marvel Ultimate that they've had so far, and where the Maker is coming back. And again, for those who don't know, the Maker is an evil version of Reed Richards. You can imagine, like, the smartest man in the world or the universe or whatever becomes a villain and uses that mind and power for nefarious reasons or ways. That's, it could be really, really scary. And so he is, I think, a great villain. And I think when they turned him in to a villain way back in the first original version of the Ultimate Universe, I didn't know, or maybe they, I mean, I don't know if they could have predicted or known that he would have really stuck and really lasted this long, but he really is a great, great villain. And so for him, they've been anticipating his return, and this is going to be his return. And then what happens after this? Do they blow it up and start over again? Do they win? Does the Maker win? I think that's what's fun about these alternate universes. You can kind of do whatever. You have the mainstream continuity that does their thing, but then with these alternate universes, you can play around with it and recon it as many times as you want. So that was kind of the big news they're able to reveal at this Comic-Con. And what's cool at Comic-Con, you hear these announcements and they got to solicit to the local comic shop, but they can show images and have the creators at panels and at tables to talk about, you know, the origin of these things and showing first images and people ooh and ah at the artwork and what could happen and those kind of, and tease that kind of stuff. So I'm pretty excited to see what they would do with that. Another big one that they announced, DC is doing this big event, fall event called KO DC Knockout, where there's going to be like Squid Game meets Mortal Kombat meets DC characters. And they're going to have this massive tournament to see who gets to fight, I think, as Omega King, Omega Prime, or whatever Apocalypse became in terms of Omega, when it comes to this kind of all-in absolute universe, all those things just kind of converging on this one big kind of tournament, where who doesn't like to see like Street Fighter level heroes battling against each other, see who wins at the end, you know? It's Scott Snyder and another artist, I forgot, let's see, Javier Fernanda? I don't know. But it looks really good. I'm there for it. I'm a big Scott Snyder fan. I like what he does, and I'm there for it. Where did you guys see some images out of that? What did you think about this KO tournament?
Yeah, I saw Snyder, and I think Josh Williamson is heavily involved in it too. Yeah, so they, like, I've seen them promoting it loosely. So it sounds cool. I mean, like, I think with the popularity of Squid Game, Hunger Games, all, you know, that style of like apocalyptic sci-fi, it makes sense to capitalize on that for the big two. So yeah, I mean, it could be fun. So typically I like more, I mean, like with DC, I've mainly just been reading the absolute stuff. And then I have read Superman Unlimited, but so I haven't really followed the main continuity as much, but I'll probably check it out, see how it is.
Yeah. Fun stuff. They also announced that Matt Fraction is going to do a new Batman number one, and they released some of the artwork around that. Looks really, really fun. Really cool. He was one of the first people I met at HeroCon in Charlotte Comic-Con years ago. My first Comic-Con I ever went to was in Charlotte HeroCon, and met Matt Fraction when he was writing Iron Fist. And that was a lot of fun. So I have some nostalgia when it comes to Matt Fraction and what he creates. Yeah. Christian, anything else out there in Comic-Con that kind of perked your interest in some images and news out there?
Yeah, just real briefly, since I know we have other things to cover, we had the 30th anniversary of Mobile Suit Gundam Wing, where they had a little thing they had for that, where they're going to re-release the movie into theaters, which I could take it or leave it, because it's kind of a sour taste in my mind. There's also some hype about them possibly animating the sequel manga, Frozen Teardrop, which I especially don't want to see animated. But you know what? They're going to print money either way. They can do whatever they want. And I'm going to watch it because I'm a sap. Then we got the trailer for Aztec Batman, which has caused controversies all its own in many ways. So I'm interested to see what they do with it. And the fact of they've combined essentially every Mesoamerican culture into one. It's not just the Aztec people. It's kind of Mayans and Olmecs and Toltecs. and kind whether of you're making representing it a
hodgepodge in the right way. Yeah.
And then there's also the whole, you know, human sacrifice thing, which was an actual part of the religion. But then you have the colonialism saved them from that. And that's kind of like the argument some people would make. And that's being introduced somehow in this film. So
interesting.
That's what people think without actually having watched the film. We can't say either way. Mm-hmm. So then, of course, the Mighty Nein has been announced as like the sequel series to Vox Machina, which was the D&D group made with Critical Role. And we got our first images from Maul Shadow Lord in Ahsoka season 2. And I think going any further, that's where I'm at.
Yeah. I know. And they did some, Darth Maul, Shadowland, Ahsoka season 2. And then there is a Percy Jackson season 2 trailer they dropped. And then Rick and Morty is spinning off. President Curtis is getting his own kind of spinoff from Rick and Morty, which I'm a Rick and Morty fan. I find it clever. And so that would be pretty fun. There's also more footage from Tron Ares. And I guess I saw the bigger trailer with that when I went to see Fantastic Four. And man, going way back to the original Tron, me being a kid and Disney and computer graphics, I'm a continued sucker for Tron. I just want more Tron. It's not that like I'm a huge Tron fan. It's just when I see the images and the music and the light cycles, I'm there. I'm sold. I don't care if it's good or not. I'm going to be there just to see.
That's one like I don't even have any real attachment to, but I'm really looking forward to that one as well. It looks a ton of fun. And just effects wise, like, and then Predator as well. They've got with Schwarzenegger in it. So that'll be really cool as well. Yeah. But no, Tron I'm there for. And then, the last in Peacemaker season 2 trailer was the big, for me. I'm very excited for it.
When is Peacemaker season 2 drop? When is
in about a month, less than a month, August 21st, I think.
Wow. Okay. That quick.
Yeah.
Man,
yeah.
I was thinking it's going to be November.
Like super. Oh no. Yeah. It's like Superman will still be in theaters. And then, you can watch the season 2.
Well, there you go, folks. There's San Diego Comic-Con. Let's move over to, South Park.
Here at Systematic Ecology, we believe in a few things. We believe that there is freedom in Christ to like what you like. We believe that Christian nationalism is a heresy. And probably most important that I'm going to talk about today, at least, is that we believe the best place to spend your extra cash is on the Systematic Ecology merch store. That's right. This is a shameless shill for our own products. We go through Creator Spring and we have a few great products on there. Me personally, I'm a big like black shirt kind of guy, muted colors. But there's nothing better to like throw a little some extra on there with like a black baseball cap, the dad hat with the Systematic Ecology logo on it. That's a classic. I just really think if you got a couple, $30 extra dollars, that's for us.
Season 27, episode 1. Sermon on the Mount. And if you're watching this on YouTube, there is Jesus talking to the crowd, talking through his teeth, trying to tell them to chill the F out while they're sitting on the Mount. Sermon on the Mount. So I heard about, the new season, the hype and the deals being made and the controversy around Paramount and Colbert and Trump and people being sued and payouts, and South Park got a $1 billion contract. And then like a week later, they drop them. They massively troll the big boss of trolls in their episode 20, season 27, episode 1. And I'm not a big South Park watcher. I'll watch every now and then. I know its cultural significance, and I do find their humor is pretty much right up the alley with my own humor, for better or worse. And so, I was like, man, I got to watch this. So I was at my mom's and she has cable, and I pulled it up, not with my mom, but later on, my brother and I sat and watched this together, and I could not believe what I saw. I cannot believe what they got away with. I can't believe that they did what they did. And as someone who admire, game respects game, when you happen like this new administration and what they do with AI and trolling Obama or other people, what they did in here to flip it, was masterful, whether you agree with the language and the crude humor or not, or how they portray Jesus or not. game respects game in terms of how they flipped it back. They flipped tables, as maybe Jesus might have done on corporate America. So Christian, chime in. Do you want to do a quick summary? I mean, what's a quick summary of this episode and then what unfolded?
So new season, new president coming in. We have Jesus being brought into school to talk to people. And that, of course, offends people because, you know, are you introducing religion to school, separation of church and state? And that causes issues. Now, PC principal is no longer political correctness principal. He is now power Christian principal because he has given up on the woke stuff because he doesn't see it winning anymore. So what do? When you're down in the dumps, you find Christ. And he quite literally does find him and bring him into school. This then
literally brings Jesus to school. Yeah, he literally brings Jesus to school.
Escalates to the point where people are going after Mr. Garrison, who was their Trump figure for many years, but now they have decided to just make him completely separate. And we have essentially our new Saddam Hussein characterization and look for Donald Trump, who reacts much in the same way that Saddam Hussein would in the earlier seasons of the show, just like saying nonsense and telling people to just relax and just to get in line with everything. And he's suing people. And it gets to the point where Jesus has his Sermon on the Mount and a very play. I mean, it's obvious they know a little of Christianity to bring up specific verses and stuff like that. And he's like, look, guys, you got to relax. You can't be doing this. He says it way worse than I am. In South Park language. And just like, look, in a very meta way, Paramount has to bow to our new overlord here, who has caused Colbert to lose his show and all these other things. And the merger maybe won't happen, but they got their money. So what Trey and Matt do, they make fun of everyone. They made fun of conservatives, they made fun of liberals, and they made fun of themselves. And that's what I ask of them, that they keep making fun of everyone. Because there were parts where I felt uncomfortable. There are parts where I was laughing out loud. Like, it's just a fun episode. Because eventually they give in. The town itself sells out to Trump and gives a message of, if you've watched any TV or you've been on Reddit at all, you've seen the advertisement for He Gets Us. And I died laughing when I saw the message they did. He gets us. He trumped us.
Yes.
It's just gets 10 out of 10. I'm done.
Yeah. And it goes to say, like, the beginning starts with Cartman being upset that they canceled his favorite podcast, which is on NPR, which he finds really, really funny and entertaining. And the fact that he finds it very, very funny of these news podcasts about people suffering in war and starvation. He's like, that's really funny. I can't believe they canceled my NPR. And he gets really depressed. And then Jesus shows up at school and people are like, why is this guy here? And if at first you're like, is this like a hologram? Are they playing? No, Jesus really, really shows up. But yeah, it's lampooning, it's parodying, it's trolling. And like you said, South Park is known, nobody's safe when it comes to these guys, right? And so everybody has their time of being, you know, holding up a mirror to expose what are you really trying to say and really trying to communicate? And man, they troll Trump, and that he's literally sleeping with Satan. He's literally in the bed with Satan. And they're full frontal in this. Full frontal. They show Trump's private parts. But it's so small, y'all, you know, that it's almost overlooked. It's so small. But I think, as someone who understands all kinds of sense of humor, the question is, did they go too far? Did they go too far with Trump? Did they go too far with our leaders? Go too far with evangelical Christianity, with their portrayal of Jesus? For me, I stand, there. Even me, someone who it is hard to offend, I laugh at most things. There were moments when I felt slightly uncomfortable, and that's the point. I'm glad it did. If I didn't feel uncomfortable, I would be a little worried. But to understand what they're parroting and what they're lampooning to kind of hold up and show what's going on in the world, I thought it was necessary at this time. Kevin, if someone hadn't seen the episode but seen clips and around the world, what yeah. around GalaxyCon that you were at, were people talking about it? Was there whispers? What's the word on the street?
I'm in a group chat from like we're from church where we call it like Nerd Herd because like, it's a bunch of like, geeks from church. And like I got like one of them texted like last Thursday like, guys, have you seen the South Park episode? And so everyone is talking about it there. So yeah, I've seen a ton of conversation. I mean, I agree. I mean, everything from what I've seen, I haven't watched a ton of South Park over the years. It is like you, it is very much the humor I enjoy. I just haven't gone through a lot of it, but I really admire Trey Parker and Matt Stone. And I think this episode in particular is very bold comedic storytelling. And I also, because I saw the Jon Stewart episode last week that was in the aftermath of the Colbert cancellation. And yeah, that also, his rant there was, I think, one of the best things I've seen in late night TV in a while, because he was able to just go full throttle on the network that he works for, too, which was hilarious. And so yeah, I think in this era right now, when, you know, there are leaders that, I mean, the majority of people are against, and, you know, everything is chaotic, I think comedy is one of the best tools we have to really pull back layers and, you know, expose hypocrisy and, you know, and satirize everything and kind of get and spark this kind of conversation. So, I realize this is not everyone's cup of tea and it would make many uncomfortable, but it's also, this exemplifies like what great satire, what great comedy can do.
I agree. And I think, you know, similar to what our conversations around Righteous Gemstones, it's not for everybody. The humor is not for everybody, but in terms of whether you're laughing at yourself or is holding up a mirror or is parroting something that you need to take maybe a closer look at to say, why is this funny? Why does this make me feel uncomfortable? Why is this something that they're lifting up as like, hey, is this how people really truly see us? And if I don't like being seen that way, what am I doing that leads people to think this way or to stereotype me in this particular way, where it's Christianity or going to church or my politics or who I voted for? They went at it pretty hard. And I know if you're a Trump supporter or you voted for him, this, you're probably not watching this South Park at all. Or this particular episode, but I would be curious. I mean, I'm going to put it out there. If you're a listener and someone who voted that way and you watch this episode, what are your deep feelings? What are your critiques? What are you thinking? Are you able to laugh at it? Does it strike a nerve? I would love to know. You could DM me. You can message me personally. I'm not going to attack you. I am just genuinely, genuinely curious, how this landed with somebody who may have voted, Trump or is a MAGA supporter. I'm genuinely curious how this lands, if you watched it or not, and what you think about it. Anything else? This isn't something I'm going to show at youth group, but this may be something that in terms of a small group of friends that I really, really trust to watch with and say, what did you think? What did you find was funny? What did you think was off-putting? What do you think this says about our nation and where we're at in our world today? And in an age of polarization, everything's getting leveled up to a higher, higher, higher level. You're just leveling up so much. Is there a ceiling? Is there a place where we will go too far? I am uncomfortable with portrayal of people using AI and how it can be used, whether it's Trump using AI of showing Obama getting arrested in the Oval Office and then flipping it around to Trump walking in the desert, being stripped down literally, knowing that that's not really him acting, but it looks really like it. I mean, part of me is funny, but part of me, part of using that, using AI imagery like that to portray someone who looks really, really real does start to make me feel uncomfortable. And I have to ask, like, well, how are we using this tool and how do we treat and love our neighbor and our enemy? So that's where my mind goes, where in terms of my humor, but also how far is too far, I guess. And it's not necessarily a rhetorical question. It's not necessarily there's an easy answer after this. Yeah. I'm just proposing it and throwing it out there because I think it's important to ask.
Yeah.
With shows like
fair that. Fair is fair. If you're going to retreat as the president of the United States, an AI-generated image of Biden being captured in the back of a trunk, and then this happens, you don't have the right to say you can't do that. You know, you would have the right to say no to that if you hadn't have done it. That doesn't mean you get to bully people. That doesn't mean, you know, that you can bring people down. But like, look, fair is fair. And as, you know, the token conservative of the show, as Joe and I were joking about the other day, none of this offends me in that manner, but yeah, the idea of using AI to do something like this does offend me to an extent. Mm-hmm. But once again, fair is fair. I hate to say it. You did it. It can be used against you too. When you're making regulations against this or for it, just because you like what it did when you were going against someone else, you don't get to whine and complain when it's used against you. Like, yeah, that's just how things work.
That's a good response. I like that, Chris. Yeah. It's one point to, you know, like you get to a point and you're like, gloves are off. You drew a line in the sand, you crossed it. Where do I do it? And I guess part of me at some point, you know, in terms of the authentic Jesus of, how do we find a third way to find peace of, loving and taking care of neighbor has to be entered into the conversation. What I found super funny about this that I really connected with is him on the mount and talking to the people, and he's talking through his teeth and telling people to really calm down. And then he's handing them bread and going, just eat the bread. Just eat the bread, folks. All I want you to do is just eat. I'm feeding you. Eat the breads. Shut up. Let me talk to you about what's really going on. And I gotta be honest. When I was serving communion this past week, I was just like, all right, folks, just eat the bread. Just eat the bread. It's that simple. Just eat the bread. It was going through the back of my mind. Unspoken, but that was unspoken. Being out there. Unspoken. Kevin, anything else to chime in there?
I mean, I have a whole episode on just like uses of AI and what I think about there. I know that's all conversation, mm-hmm. but your point about just like, as far as holding a mirror to everything, I mean, if you look at the White House official like social media page right now, it's just a mess of memes and all that stuff. So, I mean,
and they name it this episode. When Trump is in bed with Satan and he's like, hey, are you in the mood? He goes, not right now. You're too busy with all your memes and trolling people out there. And it's just like, I can't help but giggle and laugh at it. It's like, yeah, that's basically what's going on. So not wrong.
Right. It's holding a mirror to it. So I have no problem with that. But yeah, when it comes to like AI use, that's a whole conversation I have just how it's used society today. But holding a mirror to just how absurd things are. Yeah, I mean, I think that's what good comedy and satire is all about.
Cool. All right, let's go to something a little bit more uplifting, more people we can get on the same page with. Maybe perhaps a movie that talks about a little bit more wholesome things that you could take the whole family to. When I went to go see Fantastic Four, I saw older adults, retirees, middle-aged people like myself, 20-year-olds, my daughter, and little kids between like 5 and 10 years old were all at this movie, Fantastic Four. And here we go. Yes, super fantastic. We've completed the three. It's out there in the wild. All right. Let me just say that I really liked this movie a lot. I thought it was solid. As someone who's familiar with the comics and this first family of Marvel, I think it was a super solid movie. Now, one thing when I came out of the movie, I wouldn't say that I was like so blown away that I was just amazed and blown away by it, because I am really familiar with this story and these people, and they didn't do necessarily anything new in terms of plot. But in terms of the look, the aesthetic is kind of like retro futuristic world that's right out of like a world Disney Tomorrowland of episode of the Jetsons meets MCU kind of thing. I could watch this movie and couldn't take my eyes off of this movie the entire time. I love the look, I love the feel. I thought they captured the characters perfectly. The look of Galactus, Silver Surfer, man, her surfing on lava, I was like, whoa, someone's who's a surfer must have they must have used a real surfer to consult like what it looks like to ride a surfboard. So I thought it was super cool, super fun. I really like this movie. Was it better than we'll talk more about Super Fantastic and where we rank all those things, but I really like this movie. Christian, where are you? We'll get to you, Kevin, in just a second, because I know there's something hanging there. Christian, what'd you feel and think about this
movie? I think I texted you guys, like, you know, I ultimately, I'm very positive on this film, but I do have some gripes. I mm-hmm. think I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. Pedro's Reed, perfect. The scenes he did in this movie were pretty dang good, of like realizing he's not adequate enough and why he has these anxieties. I loved that. Vanessa Kirby as Sue, right? Loved her. I think she did a fantastic job, you know, at being a mother, but also the emotional center of the team, not in a like stereotypical fashion, but like someone who legitimately loves these people as family. Then Galactus, perfect. That's exactly what I want Michael Actis.
I
want him to look like that and act like that. And they kind of captured that perfectly. The fight scenes were really well done. The aesthetic of this film, I'm not one who normally cares about that, but like they went full on with it and they did fantastic. Yeah. I figured I'd just use that pun. My gripes, just real quick, just to not go over too far. I'm not big on what they did with Johnny here. They made him far too smart and they did a tell not show for his womanizing instincts. And that fell really flat to me. Silver Surfer, I'm kind of iffy on. It's like, okay, why does she need to be Shalabal? And there was really no reason in the film to do so other than like, we're going to like work off of the tell not show for Johnny's flirtatious attitude. And that didn't work for me either. But the scenes with the surfboard though, I'm with you there. They look really good. And also the fact, spoilers, by the way, doesn't show up until like the very end of the film again after having that confrontation. So there's nothing that's really built up there because we're lacking in Alicia Masters and we're lacking the Watcher. And I'm not big on those being removed from the film. Ben does have a little love interest. That, like, he's fine in the film, but it should have been Alicia Masters. And I guess they didn't want to do Rise of the Silver Surfer again. But if you're going to adapt this story, adapt it right. So, but at the end of the day, like I said, I am more positive. I love this film. I'm eager to see them in Avengers. This was fun.
Hey, podcast fam. Want to stay even more connected with the show? We've got you covered. Check us out on Instagram and Blue Sky, where we're posting exclusive content and bonus videos and fun updates that you won't get anywhere else. From sneak previews of upcoming episodes to bonus content, our social accounts are the best way to keep the conversation going. Plus, it's a great spot for you to interact with other listeners and share your thoughts. We love hearing from you. When you follow us, it helps us grow and continue bringing you the content that you love. Whether it's a funny poll, a quick clip from today's episodes, or just random thoughts, you're feel more plugged into everything we're doing. So go ahead and hit that follow button on Instagram and Blue Sky. It's one more way to be a part of the show and keep the good vibes flowing. Thanks for being a part of the family, and we can't wait to see you there.
So I'll start with the things I liked. I mean, no question, the casting I thought was great here. Everyone just really, this was these characters brought to life. I love Pedro, love Vanessa Kirby, Joseph Quinn from Stranger Things, Eban Moss, Back Rock, I think is how you say it, from The Bear. All of them were great. I love the aesthetic and the production design, especially. Like you guys said, it really captured the 1960s feel and that Jetson sci-fi element. So all of that was great. No doubt that they captured the spirit of these characters and the comic really well. But I have to say, as a movie as a whole, I felt very underwhelmed. I thought it was a very lackluster scripts to begin with, where it lacks any real tension. I know the comparison probably gets old, but I'm gonna do it anyway because The Incredibles is still the best Fantastic Four movie and will always be. But I mean, just when I think about that movie versus this one, that movie has depth, it has characterization, it has drama. You have this dysfunctional family navigating a world. In that case, they're in a world where superheroes are now outlawed and Mr. Incredible is struggling to let go of his past, but then a new threat arises. And there's so much tension and so much intrigue here in that movie. And in here, it just felt like all of that was missing. I mean, I know, yes, like they become parents here in the movie while this big threat comes to their world. But at no point did I feel like there were any genuine stakes, like, they weren't going to be fine. I mean, they don't really deal with the family dynamics that much. And other than they had the family dinner scene, which was cool. But again, they're all kind of just happy-go-lucky there. There's not as much tension there in the And so that was lacking. Sorry, Will. I'm just, I thought they could have done so much more with the parenthood aspect of like, okay, what is it going to be like for them to become parents while this big threat comes to them? And that never really solidified. It just like everything was pretty much like it always going to work out, you know, in every scene. There was never really a big drop. The other thing from a visual standpoint, like I said, I love the production design and the aesthetic. And this may sound nitpicky, but I don't think it really is. This is after, like, I love the first 5 minutes of the movie. And then after that, one of the things that it struck me, and as soon as I started thinking about it, I couldn't stop, is, so I know this is a lot of movies today, but it was particularly noticeable here, where there's about 1,000 shots a minute. And by that, I mean, the camera is constantly cutting back and forth unnecessarily. So if they're just in a scene where they're talking, the camera has to cut back and forth every time a character is speaking, and it doesn't give you any room to breathe. That, to me, was very reflective of the film's pacing, and it's just, it was rushed. It was, it really fell flat for me there. So yeah, when I think about it, and again, by the end of it, it was just like, okay, they didn't, like, I didn't feel like there was any real arc for them. You know, they start off in the movie when, okay, Reed and Sue find out they're pregnant. I was like, okay, that's a great, you know, segue here. What are they going to do there? And then there's never, and you know, there's not a lot of scenes where they are really reflecting on, oh, we're, you know, we're parents now, we're dealing with this. You know, obviously they have to, when Galactus comes, they have to deal with the element of, you know, do they sacrifice Franklin in order to save the world? But you know, they find a workaround around that. It just felt too, this really felt like, because Doomsday is going to put so much chaos and be, I think, very much more in line with Infinity War for all of the heroes, it felt like this movie was like, okay, let's have a little light, fun, you know, adventure before that. With no, and that's fine, but you still have to have drama and tension and stakes, and I felt all of that was lacking here. So it just felt way too safe. I was just, yeah, I mean, I hate to say it, how underwhelmed I was, you know, especially because there were elements that really worked and really shined, but the movie as a whole, I was just kind of like, eh, that was it.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah, I can see that. There's parts of me that felt like it was a setup for Doomsday. We got to introduce this family and give you a quick best hits of Fantastic Four and let you know who they are, where they come from, and their nature and their character, so that they can make a big difference in Doomsday. For me, I guess the base going in kind of optimistic and hopeful and loving these actors. It was short. I was like, man, this is less than 2 hours. I was thinking there was going to be another big reveal that it just kind of, they got rid of Galactus pretty quick. And I'm like, okay, is there something else? Is there another surprise coming? It just didn't happen. But for me, I felt like finally, similar to the Superman movie, that this was a comic book movie that wasn't embarrassed of its source material and embarrassed of the comics. They're like, we're going to lean in hard to what the comics actually do, whether it's the Mole Man, or whether it's Galactus, or whether it's Silver Surfer. We're going to like not be embarrassed to what it is, which is a comic book movie. And I felt like Superman did a similar thing. And again, they dropped you right into the middle of a universe that they're already established, they're already there. They give some recaps similar to, if you read a comic book, you jump right into, you know, Fantastic Four 457. You have a recap page at the very beginning, and then you hop in, you're right into the story. If you want to find out more, read a couple before, read a couple after, jump in the story. And I felt like the movie did that too, which I really felt refreshed, refreshing aspect of Superman and Fantastic Four. You just plop me right in. It's not a big, long origin story. Just plop me in the universe and let's go with it. So that's kind of where it was. And I understand, you know, people like, well, wasn't Silver Surfer like a dude? Where is Norrin Radd? Why does it have to be a swap? But I think them placing it in an alternate universe, 828, which you find out later why they name it that. But so it makes sense that, oh, this version is female, and the connection of her backstory of her daughter or her family connecting with Sue Storm and her motherhood and want to protect her child was very kind of paralleled side by side, which again, spoilers, hope you watch this movie before you listen to this, that Silver Surfer came out to help in the long run, which happens in the comics. No matter what version of the universe, Silver Surfer's going to help the heroes and fight against Galactus. So I like those aspects of the movie.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Gershon.
Yeah, I'd agree a little more. If she had had moments with Sue instead of Johnny, well, I think that would have been much better. Kevin, one of your earlier points, I also agree that there was some tension removed from this film, especially the scene where Sue leaves the Baxter Building with Franklin. That was the second worst turn to crowd speech I've heard in the MCU. The first, of course, being Falcon and Winter Soldier, where actually Captain America at that time, is like, hey, do better. And he doesn't actually tell people how. And it's just like, do better. Okay, but that's great. But like, that's like if I had a sermon, I was like, hey, be like Jesus. So that's great. But like, Can you tell me how to do it? It's not really that effective.
I don't disagree.
Yeah. That's kind of why we're here. Yeah. So like, but you know what? It's fine. I get it.
I also, this is my spoiler alert here, but the one that really got me that made me cringe was the fake death scene at the end with Sue, where I was just like, you got to be kidding me. Because like, again, that felt like they're like half-baked attempts to add tension in there. Like, we didn't know she wasn't going to be healed by Franklin in that moment, you know? And it just like, despite Pedro Pascal and Viscerby giving great performances there, that was just like, come on. We've seen this, particularly in the MCU, a million times, and it was not earned there at all.
I think that was more for regular moviegoers who don't know who Franklin Richards is. But yeah, I agree. I saw it coming from a mile away. And the other thing I will say that's underbaked is the Doom and Latveria side of things. Because, of course, that is the post-credit scene after, well, the first one, where he shows up. And because we have to tip people off about who it is, we have to have the mask off of his face. And it's so poorly done there. There's like one scene we see that the Latverian spokesperson or ambassador isn't there, and that's it. Like, couldn't you have had a scene where like they didn't have enough resources and maybe like out of nowhere supplies from Latveria come? That way, you know, Doom is interested. It explains why he doesn't show up to help them or go after Galactus, because you know, he lives on the world too. So you'd think he'd be interested in doing something, but you know what? It's an imperfect film, but I'm still giving this an 8 out of 10 because I really enjoyed it.
Sure.
I will say, I'll push back a little bit on the death scene, because it was 8-2-8, because this is in a different universe, I kept thinking, wow, like they could do anything they want here because it's not MCU proper. It's not, you know, 616. They could kill off a character. They could take away this baby. He could get sucked out into the portal with Galactus and they're grieving the loss of their baby. Sue could die in this universe and then they get in the universe and they're missing their own Sue Storm from this particular universe. So for me, I was on the edge of my seat, like, are they going to do this? Are they really going to do this? I can't believe they're doing this. And they're like, okay, they're brought back. That makes complete sense because of where he is. And my daughter, who doesn't know this, know the Fantastic Four really a lot at all, she was out there. She's like, what are they going to do? Are they going to kill that baby? Are they going to kill that mom? She was touched and even had like a little tear at the end. Like, I can't believe she did this for her family and is going to die. So watching through her eyes was a little different for me. And I'll say that, like on the way into the movie, them asking for like, do I need to know anything? I gave them a little bit of a backdrop. Like, look, this was the first real, hit for Marvel Comics with Jack, Kirby and Stan Lee. And so they're the first family of comics. And so that's why they call it First Step. So I had some coaching there that its place in like comic book history and what they tried to do with this movie for three times. And then finally now they're trying to get them off and going into MCU proper. A little bit of coaching there. But as a standalone, they were able to understand the story, their powers and what's going on and felt like I liked it. Christian.
Yeah. Real quick, I would have also appreciated if Galactus had actually called Franklin a mutant as well as talked about the power cosmic. But my family's about to rebel on me because we need dinner. So I'm going to have to leave this conversation. My recommendation was a South Park episode. Love you guys. I will see you later.
Thanks, Christian.
Thanks, Christian. Take care, dude. You. Yeah, I mean, that's where I kind of, Kevin, I like you know, we have lots of hosts and lots of, perspectives on the show that we can say like this is what landed well, this is what didn't. And for me, I guess I kind of went in with a super jurtastic, you know, hey, this summer is going to be great with movies, and some I have favorites more than others, but I'll reveal how I rank these on that episode coming up soon. But I will say that like our whole fan was like, yeah, we liked as a whole Superman better and we had a lot more fun. But this was a solid movie that we enjoyed, a nice setup, where a nice addition to the MCU and where they take it further with this family is a great addition to how they move forward and the grand universe of things.
And like you said, too, I definitely see a lot. It was interesting, the parallels between this and Superman, particularly in the setup, you know, throwing you right into a universe, like not doing the origin. I loved all of that. But yeah, I just think, you know, Thunderbolts was easily my favorite MCU movie this year and my favorite in a while, too. I mean, I've seen every MCU movie in theaters. I've been a loyal fan a long time. I've seen all the ups and downs. But Thunderbolts, I think I really liked the emotional crux to it. The cast, you know, the story, it just all came together really well. This one, yeah, I just thought, I don't know, it was lacking a lot there. And again, visually, that was really what bothered me, was the, you know, great aspects of the aesthetic and the tone juxtaposed with what I thought was really poor camera work and editing, that made, so that's where I wasn't as like glued to the screen the whole time. I was like, oh, this is kind of disorienting here, in terms of how the action plays out. But yeah, I mean, again, there's definitely, and I also, the best part of the movie is the Jack Kirby tribute at the end. I mean, it's taken what, 30 something movies, for them to really give Kirby the praise, deserved. So I was very happy about that.
Yeah, I agree. They named this, the Earth 828 and the multiverse, yeah, of Earths. And that's because it's Jack's birthday. August 28th, yeah, Jack Kirby's birthday. If you're new to the show, or new to Geeking Out, new to Fantastic Four, new to comics, do yourself a favor and explore and do a deep dive on who Jack Kirby is and what he means to the comic book industry in terms of his art and creativity. And, you know, there's a couple Easter eggs out there when it came to like some of the street signs and the store signs and a Timely Comics poster on the wall of people who are writing the comics for Fantastic Four, because that's all part of Marvel history from the 40s, 50s into the 60s. And then what we understood as Marvel Comics in the 70s when it comes to Fantastic Four and Amazing Spider-Man and Thor and Hulk and Avengers and X-Men. Mm-hmm. Stan and Kirby were all part of that. So it's cool that they named it that and gave a tribute, yeah, to him. And really the character of Ben Grimm, the Thing, mm-hmm, is patterned after Jack Kirby in terms of growing up in the Bronx and a thick accent and being kind of a brawler and have a cigar hanging out of his mouth and, you know, feeling like he's a fish out of water as someone who's a Jewish in the Bronx in the times of the Depression and growing up and post World War II, all those things. I really identified with that character and it shows in here. So I really enjoyed the movie. I understand some of the, nitpicks that people have or where things didn't land quite right. It did feel awfully short. It did seem like, oh, we're, yeah, going to just set up this team and they're going to introduce this team to those who don't understand they are. And then we're going to really use them and really amp it up. And the Avengers Doomsday. And I will say that I'm kind of tired of it. I want to see setup and end credit scenes, but I want them to focus on just like one movie, not just the, yeah, constant setup to the next big event or thing, which I think, mm-hmm, comics does often too, that often I get fatigued with just telling a story. And I did feel like this had a coherent story. It wasn't choppy. The story held together a little better than, it doesn't seem like there are too many rewrites or too many cooks in the kitchen when it comes to presenting the story. I thought that the plot flowed a little bit better than other comics. That's what I liked about Thunderbolts as well.
Yeah. Well, I think too, also Matt Shackman comes from a TV background. And I mean, it's an interesting thing because he directed WandaVision, which is one of my favorite MCU things ever. I wonder too, I wonder about this for Fantastic Four for a long time before this movie came out with the movie failures in the past. I'm like, would it work better as a show? I realized, you know, there's budget issues. You have to deal with that. Being able to make a big, yeah, spectacle on a TV budget. But still, I just wonder if that, like the serialized storytelling works better for Fantastic Four.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Good point. It's like when I see it as a TV show, there are times where I'm like, oh, I would love to see this as a movie. Just do a movie. And then when I see like, it's like, this would have been better with a TV show. Right, so I don't know. All those forms exist.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Cool. Well, let us know what you think, friends, in the YouTube comments, like and share. Reach out to us on the socials. We'd love to know your thoughts on these things. Again, we're going to talk about Supertastic episode when we talk about all three movies and our rankings. Maybe we'll have more Systematic Geekologist hosts on there as a round table to really dive in and see what's going on. We could get really heated in there and start throwing things and maybe stretch across the table and write equations up on chalkboards to try to figure out who's better, who's worse when it comes to their opinions. I think we need Reed Richards to really help us kind of map out and solve the problem of who has the best opinions, who has the worst opinions. I think that could work. But yeah, we couldn't do this without you guys. Thank you so much. If you're going to talk, Kevin, if you were going to recommend one thing that we talked about on this show today. One thing, one thing only you're going to recommend. What would you recommend?
Kind of a cheat, but Eddington, and then go, after you watch the movie, go listen to the A24 podcast episode with Ari Aster and Bill Hader. It's excellent.
I really like that. Yeah, for me, I would say, you know, wherever you are in the political or religious spectrum, I think watching the South Park episode and with an open mind and to say, what are they critiquing? What are they going after? What has gone on in the world that has brought us to this point in history of comedy, parody, politics, religion, all those things swirling? I think there's the case study. I think some history teacher is going to get in a class and really pick apart and dissect why the world has brought us to the point where South Park feels like it has to do an episode of that, just from a study point of view. And if you have good sense of humor, you might laugh a little bit too. So that's, I recommend that as well. And I'm a cheat too and say, go see Fantastic Four. And just, you know, a marvel at the aesthetic and what they put together in terms of set pieces. I was like, man, they spent a lot of money on how to create this world.
Yeah.
Huge budget. Thanks, y'all. We love you. We appreciate it. We're going to just start rolling out here, and there'll be more episodes coming up.
Hey, be fantastic to each other, and we will see you next time.
Hey guys, Christian here to talk about our YouTube page. That's where you can go find us at youtube.com/@systematicgeekology. We have exclusive stuff there, exclusive videos where you can just hear other topics that you'll never hear on the podcast proper. These include things like comic book catch up, where we're discussing the newest comics that we're reading, Friday Night Frights, where Joe Day and I explore a cryptozoological, paranormal, ufological item of discussion. Has a lot of good fun there. I have a lot of great times with him. We have spontaneous YouTube shorts that we decided to do, a topic we wanted to discuss. They're in a very short form. We do them there as well. You can interact with us live as we're recording like a What's New episode or something like that. You have something you want to chime in? Well, how can you do it unless you head over to youtube.com/@systematicgeekology. All right, guys. See ya.
Hi, friends. It's Laura here. And I just wanted to say thank you for listening to our show. Systematic Geekology is a part of a larger podcast network called the Anazal Podcast Network. Dummy for Theology is Joshua Noel's show discussing different theological topics from various perspectives and attempting to give people more questions than answers. My Seminary Life is Brandon Knight's show. It started as him going through what he was learning in seminary, and after he graduated, he's been doing independent studies and has a lot of fun series like on hermeneutics, Bonhoeffer Summer, and worship. And then Friday Night Frights is a monthly show with Christian Ashley and Joe Day. They have a vote on the Systematic Geekology Facebook group to choose a topic each month and discuss everything from cryptos to ghosts to aliens to serial killers and more. So we hope you'll give it a listen, and thanks for being part of what we're putting out there.